Currently speaking to Tim Fisher, the first resident ambassador from Australia to the Holy See. Welcome to the program, Mr. Fisher.
Thanks, Charles. It's a great privilege to be the first resident ambassador here in Rome.
Now, before we get into the relations between Australia and the Holy See and what a significant step this is in those relations, let's talk a little bit more about you. You are a longtime politician in Australia. You come from a more rural background, is that correct?
Halfway between Sydney and Melbourne, a farmer, an ex-army officer, and that gave me my first taste of Asia when I had to go to Vietnam for 12 months. But I then went on to New South Wales State Parliament, Federal Parliament, Minister for Trade and Deputy Prime Minister when I then stepped down voluntarily. When suddenly the Prime Minister rang my wife's mobile phone and said, would I be interested in coming to the Holy See?
Can you tell us a little bit more about, you mentioned, for example, you were drafted and went to Vietnam. You come from a farming background. How had these experiences shaped your outlook?
I had a very strong Jesuit education for 6 years. Before that, a small state country school. Both gave me very good groundings. And the Jesuits are good at teaching values and motivation and curiosity. Some won't agree with them, some do. It certainly taught me motivation and curiosity. So I ended up in places like the Kingdom of Bhutan, originally walked into by two Jesuits in 1627, and I've written jointly a book about that. I've ended up in East Timor because I had a focus with my parliamentary and political work, not just on my electorate, but the contribution Australia should make to its region, be it Pacific, Oceania, be it Southeast Asia or Greater Asia, and the complex issues that come with that. Indonesia, of course, the largest majority Muslim nation in the world.
Going back to this East Timor experience, of course, East Timor is one of the newest countries to be independent on Earth. Australia was a major part of that birthing process, if we may use that term. It's still one of the poorest countries in the world. It's in a very sometimes dangerous neighborhood, but also very important neighborhood as far as trade and mineral deposits and things like that. What do you see are the important things looking towards the future of East Timor?
There were two incredible letters written in the 20th century which created nation states. One was Foreign Secretary Balfour in November 1917, which led to the creation of Israel. The other was John Howard, Prime Minister of Australia, in 1998, who wrote to Habibie about what should happen with East Timor. Habibie said, well, that's your thinking, we're going to have a referendum. The referendum took place in 1999. I was an official observer, and the vote was 78% to 22% in favour of independence. And there was great spirit. There was great rejoicing. There was great uplifting of the populace with that decision. Some brutality, but eventually with Xanana Gusmão and José Ramos Horta and others, it got away. The mistake some observers would make, I'm not now allowed to make this comment, is they elected to go as an official language with Portuguese. This is a very curious decision. It is for others to comment about it in detail as to why they went with Portuguese way down there in East Timor between Australia and Indonesia. Conversely, for example, Bhutan, the language of instruction is English. You can walk up a valley towards the Tibetan border, the school kids will come running over, how are you, how are you, where are you from? And Bhutan's economically doing a whole lot better than East Timor with less resources. So I would just make the point that East Timor has terrific potential, has a great future. Australia played a significant role, continues to, Prime Minister Rudd, with meetings this week, in fact. But it is a curious decision that they chose to go with the language, as their official language, of Portuguese.
Let's go back to this phone call your wife received. Were you surprised? After all, you're not a member of the party, of the ruling party. Were you surprised that you got this phone call?
Absolutely. I'd retired from Parliament 7 years ago. I was just coming off a few boards, such as National Chair of the Royal Flying Doctor Service in Australia and some other philanthropic and commercial boards, the Adelaide-Darwin Railway Board. And I just wanted peace. I wanted to do some more book writing, joint writing, various. And the phone went. And it really threw us. And for 48 hours we pushed back, made inquiries, sought more information, but eventually accepted the kind offer by the Prime Minister, went into some training with DFAT, some Italian training, not enough, and arrived here on the 30th of January, presented credentials in a wonderful, colourful ceremony on Thursday, the 12th of February.
The Holy See and Australia have had official relations since the early 70s. You're the first resident ambassador. How significant is this posting?
This reflects a very clear-cut decision. It's been looked at in the past on and off. We've had 14 ambassadors since diplomatic recognition in 1973. But the Prime Minister said, look, we have momentum. We want to further punch beyond our numbers. We want to boost this linkage with the Holy See itself, a nation state. Rome, a hub, various in different ways you might look at it. And Australia needs to be on the ground here, fair dinkum, not just with the embassy to Italy, obviously, over the other side of the Tiber, but with the activities of Australian Ambassador Tim Fisher to the nation state of the Holy See, and carry on the good work that my deputy Holm and Giles and many others have at the level of Sharjah, but now take it forward. And I'm now in a position to do that. So I was surprised, but it reflected the government's decision to put more momentum behind issues like food security, poverty, people smuggling, piracy, and above all, interfaith dialogue.
This decision was announced at the end of the Pope's trip to Australia for World Youth Day. How significant was this trip in relations between the Holy See and Australia?
It was a reminder of the broadly stated role and perhaps a reflection of a degree of modernity associating to the nation state of the Holy See, which is forgotten about at times, by having a living current Pope down under in Australia with thousands of very vibrant pilgrims in the World Youth Day, a week of activities which were very special. I think Sydney lifted through that week, the pilgrims from all over the world did, and indeed the Pope did. And it was a magic set of moments towards the end with the benediction on the Saturday night, the Mass, and for me especially the farewell at Mascot Airport, where the Prime Minister, having cleared it with the Curia, the formal nomination process, announced my name as the first resident ambassador. I was then presented to the Pope, spoke a few words, and said I would see him in Rome. And yes, I have.
Now, when you met with the Pope here in Rome, when he presented your letters of credential, the Holy Father, of course, first of all, spoke about the fires that, of course, in the state of Victoria have led to over 200 deaths. Can you tell us a little bit, how has this affected, of course, besides the horrible loss of life, loss of property, how has this affected the people of Australia, you know, psychologically?
It's seared the nation. It has brought the nation together, brought communities together. My own valley, my wife's valley of Majigonga, there's been meetings and recovery barbecues and gatherings and church services. And that's been replicated over so much of Victoria as people have hugged each other and outreached to each other to help them find hay to feed their cattle, to help them find a shelter for their head to sleep under, because so many thousands have lost houses, and to respond to a death toll which is now over 200 and continues to rise, Charles. So it's a circumstance leading to a National Day of Memorial Services on Sunday the 22nd of February will take place, and at Caravita here in Rome, I've helped organise with the good community of Caravita and Ambassador Vanstone and others a very special mass which is to be concelebrated. Chief Celebrant Bishop Porteous from Sydney, Auxiliary Bishop from Sydney, at Caravita at 6:30 on the eve of Ash Wednesday, Tuesday the 24th of February, and of course members of the public are welcome to that.
The Pope also spoke about Australia's role in the world, in the Pacific region especially. He mentioned specifically the Millennium Development Goals. Of course, right now we're in an international financial crisis. We read every day how different governments across the world are looking more inwardly, are looking to help keep jobs home. They're looking to make sure that their own people have enough to eat, have enough energy. Does this affect the role that Australia will be playing in its region? Will Australia be able to give as much as it has before?
Australia has a set of priorities which have been recently recognised by the OECD as being very worthwhile, both the quantity but the nature of our foreign aid to small countries like East Timor and Mauritius and Oceania, most notably the Southwest Pacific, where there was a recent meeting in Port Moresby involving heads of state, and our Prime Minister diverted from everything else he was doing to make sure he was there for that day. So we will continue to give, to answer your question. We will continue to give within the resources that have been indicated by the government of the day, and as a bonus in giving. It's not only indirect and direct, but it's in the sense of agriculture. We give to the Potato Institute in Peru, the Rice Institute in the Philippines, and the breakthroughs they have with their breeding is then shared worldwide. So it helps the potato farmers in Tasmania. It helps equally the potato farmers in the Himalayan Kingdom of Bhutan.
Also, Australia, beyond a financial role in the region, is also heavily active in regional security, in promoting good governance. It has, for example, we spoke earlier about East Timor. It has also provided peacekeepers in other areas of the region. The Holy Father commented upon your relations, and he said how the relations are based upon fairness, good governance, and a sense of regional neighborhood. How difficult is this for Australia, it being the big boy on the block, to be a good neighbor, to promote the livelihood of the region, and not be seen as overbearing? Is this a difficult role for Australia?
Above all else, not to be seen as patronizing, but more practical, helpful, and moving forward to assist those countries to move forward, large and small, and to link up with them. And I think Australia over the years has worked hard at this. Now, this can be very practical. The forestry project in Nepal for 25 years was about training the villagers to protect woodlots and harvest those woodlots on a sustainable basis. So that now that you look at an aerial photograph of Nepal, you can very clearly see where the Australian aid project took place. It was sensible. It was practical. It wasn't that many dollars, but it was about bringing the villagers on board, not fighting them, but showing them a better way. And that's the essence of being a good neighbour, is helping, but helping in a way which is not going to be resented. And Australia does a lot of that. We have our frustrations, most notably, as stated by Foreign Minister, with Fiji and the state of democracy in that country. But again, we will prosecute those issues through the forum, as the heads of government have been.
Well, thank you very much for your time, and good luck in your new job.
Thank you very much, Charles. I am delighted to return to Rome in this role. A lot of work lies ahead. Take good care. Arrivederci.